From WYPR, I'm Sheila Kast. We're on the record. Marylanders have more than a year before they'll cast votes for governor, but already the field is crowded. Six Democrats have declared their candidacy, and at least that many are considering it. Do any of them have what it takes to unseat Maryland's popular Republican governor? We chat with political scientists Todd Eberle of St. Mary's College of Maryland and Malia Cromer of Goucher about Larry Hogan's prospects, the Trump effect, and potential strategies the Democratic Party might take.
Do they go full in and nominate a far-left progressive, or do they nominate somebody who actually can bring together the different factions of the Democratic Party? So Democrats don't need a coalition to win. They just need Democrats not to vote for Larry Hogan.
It's On the Record after the news.
You're listening to On the Record, the podcast, a service of your public radio, 88.1 WYPR. Find more podcasts online at wypr.org. And tell us what you think. Send an email to ontherecord@wypr.org.
Good morning, I'm Sheila Kast. We're On the Record. The gubernatorial election is more than a year away, but the field already is crowded. Six Democrats have declared their candidacy for governor. Several others have expressed interest. Do any of them have what it takes to unseat Maryland's popular Republican governor? Two Maryland political analysts have joined me to chat about the state's biggest horse race. Malia Cromer is political scientist at Goucher College. Welcome back to On the Record.
Thanks for having me.
And Todd Eberle is a political scientist at St. Mary's College of Maryland. Thanks for joining us.
Oh, it's my pleasure.
Malia Cromer, a national poll last week found that Governor Larry Hogan has the second highest approval ratings of any governor in the country. Some would ask, do Democrats in Maryland stand a chance?
I think they absolutely stand a chance. If you look at the demographics of the state, that 2-to-1 Democratic-Republican ratio is formidable, no matter how popular the governor is. Now, it certainly puts Governor Hogan in a really good position, a better position than many Republicans are in their respective blue states. Absolutely, he'll be competitive, but for the Democratic challengers, I think this will certainly be a race to watch.
And how much do you think national politics will affect this race?
Sure. And this is the million-dollar question. And if you ask a Democrat, they will say, absolutely, he will be drugged down by Trump's really terrible approval ratings in the state. As a matter of fact, a Gallup poll just came out this week, and Maryland has some of the highest levels of Trump disapproval of any state in the entire country. So there is certainly a distinction that Marylanders draw between their Republican governor, who has approval ratings in the mid-60s, and President Trump, who has an approval rating in the state around 30%. So the question is whether Trump will actually drag Larry Hogan down. It has become increasingly difficult to tie the two together as Larry Hogan continues to push himself further and further away from Donald Trump, as evidenced by threats of suing the EPA and also the first time really coming out hard against health care, joining those bipartisan group of governors to push back against the Trump administration's idea of just repealing the ACA.
Todd Eberle, you're working on a book about first impressions of Donald Trump. Let me pick up on Malia Cromer's point. Governor Hogan has distanced himself from Trump on several fronts, including the decision to pull out of the Paris Climate Accords, and as she mentioned, the Affordable Care Act. How much protection do you think those moves give Governor Hogan with Maryland voters?
Well, I certainly think it gives him protection that he needs. Because, you know, Maryland is home to a very large share of the federal workforce. These are folks who feel threatened by cuts to the EPA or to the State Department because it's their livelihood. But then you also have suburban, college-educated voters who Trump had real difficulty with, but that Hogan needs to continue to carry. But the flip side of this, of course, is one of the reasons that Hogan was able to win in 2014 was the incredibly large margins that he ran up in rural parts of the state. Those are also areas that are still strong for Trump. So Hogan has to walk this very fine line where he keeps moderate conservative Democrats who voted for him in 2014 happy, while at the same time making sure those conservative voters in the rural parts of the state turn out for Hogan the same way they did in 2014.
Those conservative voters who are supporting Trump.
Exactly.
So how does he do that?
Well, you know, I'll tell you probably the day after the election in 2018 how he did or didn't do it. I think he's handling it pretty well so far. He's picking and choosing his battles quite wisely. I think if he starts to get a little bit too daring, starts pushing back against Trump the way, say, Attorney General Brian Frosch is, he's going to cross that line and there are going to be some voters who just decide to stay home.
Malia Cromer, you were nodding vigorously. How do you see Governor Hogan walking that fine line?
I think really what Todd's talking about here is how does he reconstruct the Hogan Coalition? Just as he said, the Hogan Coalition is made up of three distinct parts. One, really increased Republican turnout. Two, winning the majority of the independent vote. And three, really breaking apart part of the Democratic base. And so those moderate Democrats, they're going to be really key in this election cycle. How successful Hogan is also highly dependent on who the Democrats nominate. Do they go full in and nominate a far-left progressive? Or do they nominate somebody who actually can bring together the different factions of the Democratic Party? So Democrats don't need a coalition to win. They just need Democrats not to vote for Larry Hogan.
This is On the Record on WYPR. I'm Sheila Kast speaking with political scientists Malia Cromer and Todd Eberle about the 2018 race for governor. Okay, who will the Democrats nominate? Malia Cromer, the field of Democratic contenders for governor already includes former NAACP President Ben Jealous, State Senator Richard Madalino of Montgomery County, Prince George's County Executive Rashern Baker, among many others. At this early date, who do you think has the best chance of getting the nomination?
Gosh, it's a little bit early in speculation season. As a pollster, I would tell you the first poll hasn't even come out yet, so it's really difficult for me to fully speculate. I will say that most of the Democrats who have thrown their hat in the ring have their own strengths. I look at somebody like State Senator Rich Mendolino, and this is somebody who has been ingrained in Maryland politics, who knows the state budget, who knows all the working pieces of state Democratic Party, probably better than most. And so he certainly will contend very much so with Ben Jealous for that kind of progressive vote on that end. On the other hand, somebody like Rashern Baker can really speak to his experience as a county executive in a county that certainly has shown a significant turnaround since he took the helm. People are looking for experience with a Democratic candidate. Rashern Baker is certainly somebody that they could look towards.
Todd Eberle, do you have any insights into who has the lead at this point for the Democratic nomination?
I don't think we can say that anyone has the lead necessarily at this point. We've got several announced or expected candidates who are incredibly credible, very strong potential candidates. And I think that's what creates the difficulty for Democrats in their primary. And for those of us who would want to maybe try to make some projections here, if you've got six very strong Democratic candidates, the winner could be the person who winds up with 17% of the vote in the primary contest. So that's sort of a strange situation to be in because there are so many potentially strong candidates. But I would also point out that the thing for Democrats, what's going to drive their primary electorate and choosing a candidate may well be different than what they need to win against Hogan come November of 2018. And what I mean by that is the progressives in the party are going to be very motivated, very anti-Trump. They're going to be looking for a firebrand to carry that progressive mantle forward in the primary. That's not what they need, though, to win in the general election. So I think that's the challenge for Democrats in 2018.
Who do you think has the strongest fundraising skills, and how important will that be in how the Democratic primary shakes out, Todd?
Well, I would say that, at least initially, John Delaney, Rashern Baker, and Ben Jealous are probably going to be the top tier as far as being able to bring in funds.
We haven't mentioned John Delaney yet. He's not formally in, but
I put him in my list of potential candidates.
So you think those are the strongest in terms of fundraising, Malia?
Right, and I certainly agree. And I think the other kind of nuance of this is the idea between Maryland money and outside money. And so we finally get to take a look inside those campaign finance reports. We can look a little bit closer at Ben Jealous's candidacy. Is he getting his money primarily from individuals here in the state, or is he really supported by outside progressive groups? And what does that mean for Maryland Democratic voters? Do they prefer to have somebody who is supported through entities outside of the state, or do they really would like somebody who is supported by Marylanders here in the state? And I think that would be a really important distinction that we will get to see whenever the next reporting cycle comes out.
What about the geography of the state? Todd, who would you say has an advantage of place, if anybody?
Among the Democratic candidates, I think you've got some potentially interesting divisions going on here. You have Rashearn Baker, who obviously would have a hold in Prince George's County, which is crucial for Democrats. Richard Mattolino, who is from Montgomery County and is going to have at least some hold there, although if Doug Gansler decides to get in, he's got certainly a support there as well.
Former Attorney
Ben Jealous, you can expect to do well in Baltimore City. If Kevin Kamenetz gets in, he's got the name recognition and the voter base in Baltimore County.
County executive.
So we come back to this issue of multiple credible candidates, all with some realistic claim to a segment of the electorate. And in that case, it becomes very hard to predict the outcome of this race.
Malia?
Just not to echo everything Todd just said, I completely agree. I think that it will also be interesting to take a look at the racial demographics of the Democratic Party. What we know from the last election cycle is that African-American turnout in a Democratic primary is something in the mid-40%. So Black Democratic voters will make a big difference. And we know one thing about Baltimore City is that African-American Democratic women turn out to vote a lot. So they will be a very core demographic to an individual who actually can tap into that voter base will be very important. It's really a large question who actually can do that at this point.
Lots to talk about. We need to take a quick break here. I want to pick up on some of the points that you all just made. This is On the Record on WIPR. I'm Sheila Cass speaking with political scientists Todd Eberle of St. Mary's College of Maryland and Malia Cromer of Goucher about the 2018 race for governor. Stay with us.
This is the On the Record podcast, a service of Your Public Radio, member-supported 88.1 WYPR. You can support this podcast and everything you hear from WYPR. Become a member. Come to WYPR.org and click the donate link.
Welcome back to On the Record. I'm Sheila Cast. We're talking today about next year's gubernatorial election with political scientists Todd Eberle of St. Mary's College of Maryland and Malia Cromer of Goucher College. Todd, as we were mentioning, several African-American candidates for governor already in the race. Ben Jealous, former NAACP head, and Rashearn Baker, current county executive of Prince George's County. We may also possibly have an African-American woman, Maya Rockamore, who is the wife of Congressman Elijah Cummings. We also have an openly gay candidate, Rich Mattolino of Montgomery County. Maryland's previous governors have all been straight white men. Is the state ready for something different?
You know, it's a great question. And I guess we'll find out as this sort of plays out. But I do have the sense that, you know, maybe we have gotten to that point, especially in the state of Maryland, where African-American candidate, openly gay candidate isn't something that's going to torpedo a campaign. And I think for Maryland's Democratic Party, they really do have an obligation here to sort of say to their voters and to their coalition that we are a party that doesn't just have a diverse coalition, but diverse candidates. Because if you look at Maryland's congressional delegation right now, all of its members of the House of Representatives are male. Its senators are male. So Maryland's Democratic Party has a little bit of ground to gain here to sort of live up to that expectation of a progressive, more diverse coalition.
Does that mean, Malia Cromer, that Maya Rockamore would have a big advantage if she gets in the race?
Well, I look at Ms. Rockamore, and I think it's really important we finally have a female candidate who's ready to put her hat in the ring. And so it was really disappointing to see all these candidates emerge and yet to have a female candidate, particularly with retirement of Barbara Mikulski, and then right after that having no female representation in the congressional delegation. So yes, I think that Black women will play a very, very important role in this Democratic primary. And if she is an individual who can reach out to that particular community, a community that has extremely high levels of voter turnout, if she can fundraise, if she can demonstrate that she has a depth of knowledge of Maryland policy issues, she certainly would be a force to reckon with.
Todd Eberle, talk to me more about the dynamic among Black voters in this coming Democratic primary.
two African-Americans already competing, possibly a third. Do they basically suck up all the African-American votes among them?
Well, I mean, it's certainly possible, but I think Anthony Brown's candidacy and his loss to Larry Hogan, and then if you look at some of the turnout numbers in Prince George's County and in Baltimore City, you know, assuming that a black candidate will generate black turnout isn't necessarily a guarantee. But you've got the concern that if you've got three potentially African-American candidates, that it's going to divide that vote and perhaps deny yet another opportunity for the election of an African-American candidate statewide. And if you are an African-American Democratic voter, you know, you look back to the Ben Cardin, Kwesi Mfume race where Cardin won. You look to the Chris Van Hollen, Donna Edwards race where Chris Van Hollen won. And you're likely to start getting frustrated that the Democratic Party desperately needs your votes, but isn't consistently generating candidates that you feel represent your interests or your community.
So the message there, Malia Cromer, would be to some of the white candidates, sit down?
Well, I think the message there is you never take the African-American vote for granted and that they are a really important part of the election. What's interesting to me is Ben Jealous, former head of the NAACP, gets endorsed early on by Bernie Sanders. But to be frank, Bernie Sanders lost to Hillary Clinton by near 30 points here in the state in the Democratic primary. It's really interesting to try to pin down where African-Americans are generally on the ideological scale. Are they more like Bernie Sanders? Are they more like Hillary Clinton? And what candidate really represents that particular political disposition on an ideological scale? I'm not sure if it's Ben Jealous. We'll find out. Perhaps a Rashurn Baker or a Maya Rockmore would be more aligned with that particular set of policy values.
You raised this earlier, Todd Eberle, the idea that the ideology that may sweep the Democratic primary may not be the ideology that works well in the general election next year. Bernie Sanders obviously endorsing Ben Jealous is on the left side of the political spectrum. Would you expect that's where most of the Democratic action is going to be? Do you expect to see a split? We're seeing that the National Democratic Party try to brand itself as populist. Are we seeing that in Maryland's Democratic Party too?
Yeah, I think there are several sort of national trends that you can bring to Maryland. The National Democratic Party has voices that are saying, look, we've got to win back some of these Trump voters, these folks who have abandoned the Democratic Party, but that means moving towards the center. And then you have these powerful voices saying, absolutely not. We need to embrace more progressive politics, and that's our way to win. You see that playing out in Maryland as well. And the folks who are, you know, lining up behind Ben Jealous very early are from that progressive wing of the party. They've got the willingness to volunteer. They've got the money that they're going to donate. But can they win? And if you look at Hillary Clinton, who won overwhelmingly in big cities and in urban areas, and then sort of lost everywhere else. She couldn't carry the nation. In Maryland, Democrats have long believed that Baltimore City, Prince George's County, and Montgomery County is what delivers to them. And for Republicans to win, they just sort of have to do respectably in those areas. But if you look at Larry Hogan compared to Bob Ehrlich's recent runs, Larry Hogan did worse in Baltimore City and in Prince George's County and in Montgomery County than Bob Ehrlich did in 2002 when he won, because the rest of the state is becoming more conservative and Republican. So the old math, the old assumptions about what it takes to win in the state, I believe, are changing.
Malia, you want to weigh in on that?
So there's two ways of looking at the Democratic path to victory against Larry Hogan. One, they can nominate a progressive, and they can hope that that kind of fervor, the anti-Trump excitement, that really the push for progressive politics is enough to ramp up turnout, that they don't need the moderate Democrats anymore, or they don't need the moderate independents anymore. Or the path is finding a candidate that can speak to a large cross-section of Democrats. Democrats would probably be more inclined to vote for their own party's nominee than for Larry Hogan, and to make sure they bring them back into the fold, to make sure they don't defect anymore to Larry Hogan like they did in 2014. And so those are the two paths. There are two really choices in front of them. And we will certainly find out if what can win in the primary can win in the general election here in Maryland against a really popular governor.
This is On the Record on WIPR. I'm Sheila Kast, speaking with political scientists Malia Cromer and Todd Eberle about the 2018 race for governor. There are a couple announced candidates that we haven't mentioned. This may just be my fault, or it may be because you don't see them as big factors. So let me throw out their names. Alec Ross, author and former State Department official, and James Shea, I guess, yes, Shea has announced, former head of the Venable Law Firm and former chair of the University of Maryland Board of Regents. Do you see them as a factor, Malia?
Well, there has been rumors that Jim Shea has raised a significant amount of money. We'll find out, I think, in the coming months if that is actually true. He is somebody who's been in and around Democratic politics, but behind the scenes for many, many years. It's a completely different story when you step out from behind the scenes and become the candidate. And it'll be interesting to see if that can actually translate. Alec Ross is somebody who I don't believe has a lot of familiarity with Maryland politics. And it'll be interesting to see if his candidacy can create any sort of buzz that catches on. His biggest issue is name recognition, not just in the general electorate, but name recognition among those different activist groups, among individuals that will go out and volunteer and door knock for you as well. So he has a lot of ways to go with picking up name recognition enough to even staff a full volunteer campaign.
Todd Eberle?
Yeah, I just don't get the sense that the Democratic Party voters right now, especially activists, are looking for outsiders. I think they're looking to folks with a record on policy issues that matter. And certainly these other candidates could have an impact. They could get the name recognition and surprise people. But at this early stage, they're not as much of a factor.
Malia Cromer, in an op-ed in the Baltimore Sun in May, you wrote that Maryland's gubernatorial race is, quote, set to answer some of the most persistent and important political questions generated by the 2016 presidential election, end quote. Flesh that out for us. What kinds of questions were you talking about?
Well, I think we've covered a lot of the questions about the Democratic Party. But for me, that really core question that I want answered is, what type of election do Americans and the Marylanders really want? So are they willing to sit down and suffer through another 2016 redo, an election that was based on personality, on attacks, and really not that based in policy? Or do Marylanders really, would they like to see a return to having a policy-focused debate where Larry Hogan can come and bring his evidence from what he's achieved during his tenure in office, and he can put that against a different policy platform the Democrats can compare and contrast to him's. So instead of doing the whole Trump and Clinton thing redo, can we actually have a return to having a serious policy debate in the state? And that's what I would like to see as an American and a Marylander and a political scientist.
Todd Eberle, the election of Donald Trump has exposed deep divides in both the Republican and Democratic parties on the national level. In your view, how united is the Democratic Party in Maryland right now, and what will that mean for the election?
I think that the Democratic Party isn't quite sure what its identity is anymore in the state of Maryland. For the longest time, it was viewed as this sort of very big tent, openly welcoming conservative Democrats to liberal Democrats. But under Martin O'Malley, the party became ever more progressive. It came to mimic more and more the National Democratic Party. And I think you see in our legislative sessions, in the General Assembly, this real push by the progressive wing of the party to emerge and declare, you know, they're the ones who should control the agenda. And this pushes up against those more pragmatic leaders like Mike Miller and Mike Bush. So I think that there is a battle going on in the state right now over sort of the direction of the party. Does it continue trying to be the big tent, or does it just sort of accept that it's a progressive party now? And that's going to have some serious implications for the size of that coalition moving forward.
Will this be clear to us after the election next year?
I don't know that it will. Elections over the course of this last several decades have not offered much clarity at all in American politics. The American people have been bouncing back and forth between the two parties. They've been electing divided government, even after, you know, clear election victories for one party in the White House. So it suggests that the American people aren't satisfied with the choices that they have. They're just forced to make those choices. And I'm not sure that in Maryland we're going to suddenly see voters come out and say, oh, suddenly we're happy with the choices that we have to make.
Malia Cromer, you seem to be laughing as you...
That's a fair point. But listen, Larry Hogan is ridiculously popular with Republicans. So I think the Republicans in the state are probably pretty happy with the guy that they got. So it will be interesting with so many choices if the Democrats actually can find somebody that they really can coalesce behind that they really like. But I think the point that Todd made earlier is with this many candidates, although you have a lot of choice, that means somebody could literally win with 17% of the vote. And then how viable is that person? Are they able to then build bridges across those individuals who voted for the other candidates? And what does that look like for the general election? For me, the biggest point with the American voter in general is to keep in mind that at the end of the day, tax relief and economic development is something that Democrats like too. And that's why Larry Hogan was able to be so successful in 2014. And I think a Democrat that can harness that message will present a very tough challenge for him in 2018.
I appreciate you both raising the curtain for us on this race. Thank you so much.
Oh, thanks for having us.
Todd Eberle is Department Chair and Associate Professor of Political Science at St. Mary's College of Maryland. This fall, he will publish a book, Donald Trump, Initial Appraisals. Malia Cromer is a political scientist and director of the Sarah T. Hughes Field Politics Center at Goucher College. This is On the Record. I'm Sheila Cast. Thanks for listening. Tune in again tomorrow.
Thanks for listening to this segment of On the Record with Sheila Cast. You can catch the show on the radio Monday through Friday, 9:30 to 10 a.m. on 88.1 WYPR, your NPR news station. And you can support On the Record and all the other public radio programs that WYPR brings to you. Just click the donate link at the top of WYPR.org. And thanks.